This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Man-made chemicals known as PFAS show up in our water, air, and soil. Also known as forever chemicals, these substances are used in products including nonstick pans and clothing, and they've been tied to cancer and other diseases. Officials say drinking water is safe in the tri-state, but some local water districts have had samples measuring 3 to 4 times the EPA's reporting limits for PFAS, and the EPA wants these strict new limits to be enforceable. Today on Cincinnati Edition, we're going to discuss what all this means for local water districts and the risks associated with forever chemicals. Joining me now are Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Dan Horn. Welcome back to the program, Dan.
Thanks, Lucy.
University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Department of Environmental Health professor and associate director of the University of Cincinnati Cancer Center, Susan Penny. Thanks for being here, Professor Penny.
Thank you, Lucy. I enjoy being here.
And Greater Cincinnati Waterworks Superintendent of Water Quality, Jeff Swertfeger. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
The University of Cincinnati is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Do you have questions about forever chemicals in your drinking water? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Professor Penny, explain what PFAS are and why they're often referred to as forever chemicals.
Well, PFAS stands for perfluoroalkyl chemicals or substances, the S is substances. And so these are known as forever chemicals because they are extremely stable in both the environment and in our bodies. So internally in our bodies, it takes almost 4 years in order to get rid of 1/2 of the amount that has been taken in. In the environment, they are around for a very long time.
Wow. And what are some of the health risks associated with these chemicals? Do we know how much exposure to these chemicals can make someone sick?
So most studies have been conducted at levels that are a little higher than what we experience in the environment right now. But there are a whole list of health effects that have been shown to be associated with these chemicals in published research studies. For example, in children, where most of the studies have been done, these chemicals tend to result in lower birth weights and lower BMI in children until about the age of pubertal maturation. They also have been associated with changes in thyroid hormone, decreased thyroid hormone, changes in cholesterol levels, and that's important because the cholesterol is the building block of all hormones. And then recently we published that these chemicals are associated with the timing of reaching certain pubertal milestones in girls, such as thearchy, which is breast development, and menarche, which is the first menstrual period.
Dan, you reported on new information from the US EPA that examined how much of these PFAS are found in drinking water locally. What did you find about whether drinking water locally meets current federal health and safety standards?
Well, it's important to note that the reporting standards are just that. They're just reporting standards. There are no enforceable limits that would include penalties if the water doesn't meet certain thresholds. So what we're talking about are reporting limits. And, you know, we found a number of water districts in the area did have these contaminants in the drinking water after it had gone through the treatment process. Most of them were it depends on where you look. Some of them were as much as 200 to 300% above the reporting limits, which are usually about 3 or 4 parts per trillion. Others were significantly lower, about 5 to 20% above. These are small amounts of contaminants in the water, but as Dr. Penny said, it matters because they build up in the body over time. They don't break down easily. And so even small amounts can cause problems over the long haul.
And do I understand, Dan, that the EPA is looking at even smaller reporting standards or even smaller amounts that they want to see in the water? How does our drinking water stack up to these new standards that the EPA is considering?
Well, that's right. And it is a big deal. And I know Jeff will talk more about this as well. But, you know, they are talking about reducing or creating enforceable limits. So basically, you have, for example, a couple of these compounds, and there are hundreds of these compounds. But a couple of them are going to have these enforceable limits if the EPA regulations go through. And they would be pretty much the same as the reporting limits now, which are in the range of 3 or 4 parts per trillion for some of these compounds. So if those new regulations become enforceable, then these districts that are over the limit now would face penalties if they're over the district in the limit in the future. And so that means they're going to have to invest in a substantial amount of equipment and technology to upgrade their plants in order to be in compliance.
Dan, help us understand that 3 or 4 parts per trillion. How can you explain that or put that in a way that makes more sense to somebody like me?
They are very small numbers. So, you know, the favorite way science likes to explain this sort of thing is take the Olympic sized swimming pool and imagine that 1 part per trillion would be a grain of salt. And that's roughly what we're talking about here. So we're talking about extremely small amounts of these chemicals. But again, that's why it matters, because they are dangerous chemicals. They can cause problems over the long term. They build up in the body and in the environment. And so even small amounts of them can cause problems over the long haul. And that's why the EPA is considering these regs.
Jeff, explain how Greater Cincinnati Water Works treats its water to really filter out these forever chemicals and what kind of results you get.
Yeah. So we have 2 treatment plants here in Cincinnati. Our big treatment plant, the Richard Miller plant, is on the Ohio River. And as part of the process there, we use something called granular activated carbon. So granular activated carbon, or a lot of people call it GAC, that's just a coal that's been crushed up and baked up to about 1,800 degrees. And what that does is baking it opens up a lot of pores and tunnels inside of that carbon. And all that area on the carbon is very, very sticky to chemicals like the PFAS compounds. So when you run water over this granular activated carbon, the chemicals stick to the carbon. And then so when the water comes out, the chemicals aren't in the water anymore. So we use that technology at the Richard Miller plant. And we do see PFAS compounds in the Ohio River itself. But once it goes through the activated carbon does a great job of removing those. So we're not detecting those in our finished water. And we have all of our testing results up on the up on our website, too. So if anybody's interested, they can go there and see that.
I would remind our listeners, we're talking about forever chemicals and what stricter EPA reporting limits mean for local water districts. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. So, Jeff, you mentioned that's the system that you use in the larger plant, which I believe takes its water from the Ohio River. What about this smaller plant that Greater Cincinnati Water Works operates that draws water from aquifers?
Yeah, so the Richard Miller plant produces about 90% of the water, and the other 10% is from the aquifer plant. Up there, we have a different challenge, so we do not have treatment up there right now for the PFAS compounds. So what we're doing now is we have a grant actually from the Ohio EPA to take a look at our treatment plant there and figure out what we need to do to get rid of these compounds up there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea, Jeff, what it would cost to overhaul that smaller plant, say if you wanted to use that same, you know, carbon system that you use in the bigger plant?
Yeah, so we're in the process of looking at that right now, but we're looking at somewhere like $80 million or so to do something like that. So it is a very, very significant investment for that plant that size. Yeah.
We got an email from Diane. Diane emails, I live in rural areas. I use well water for home water supply. Where can I get my water tested for this substance? Do you know, Jeff?
Yeah, unfortunately, testing for that is extremely expensive, but she should be able to look in, just look up environmental labs in the area and just give some of them a call. They should be able to work with her to get that tested.
When you say extremely expensive, I mean, do you have any idea how much?
About $500 a sample, something like that.
Gotcha. Yeah, not $80 million, but yes. Expensive for a typical homeowner. Yeah, yeah. Susan, is it even possible to remove all PFAS from drinking water? It seems like there are new types of these chemicals just all the time.
So at this point in time, It certainly isn't possible to remove it all from untreated water. Cincinnati Water Works has done a great job of removing it, and so our treated water has either non-detectable or very, very small amounts. But we're sitting, you know, we're really lucky because people who are using private wells, whose water source is, drinking water source is from a treatment facility that doesn't have granular activated carbon, they certainly will have levels of PFAS in their water. Again, they're very, very small levels, but, you know, the issue is that now there are hundreds of published studies that have shown an association between PFAS and some health effects.
Dan, you reported that about several other water districts in the region that have much higher levels of PFAS in their water than Cincinnati. Tell us about which districts those are and what officials there had to say about their levels of these forever chemicals in their water.
Well, Loveland and Indian Hill draw from aquifers, and they do not have the state-of-the-art equipment that Jeff mentioned that the Cincinnati plant along the Ohio River uses. So they're unable to pull out the amount of chemicals that Greater Cincinnati Water Works is at that facility. And their levels were in the 3 to 4 times higher than the reporting limits currently are. And so they would not meet the standards under the new enforceable regulations if those go into effect. The conundrum that's going to come up for a lot of these smaller districts is, what do they do if they do have to upgrade? And if the answer is they all have to spend that kind of money to do it, you might see some of them go into mergers with larger water districts like Cincinnati, for example, which has happened in the past. Communities like Reading and Norwood already draw from Cincinnati Water Works, and years ago they did not. So you may see more of that happening as a cost savings for some of these communities, but it's going to be a dilemma for them as these regulations move forward.
We got an email from Rich Kogan with the Ohio River Foundation. He emails, "The risks from PFAS and other forever chemicals have been known for decades, yet the regulators have permitted their use and discharge into our waters. Instead of relying on treatment at the drinking water plants and the public cost of this and bearing the health costs and risks, what do the guests suggest needs to change regarding the use and regulation of these chemicals and hundreds of other chemicals of concern that are not regulated?" Jeff, do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's very much our frustration as well, is that it's not regulated now in discharge, not regulated in other areas, and the drinking water is the first place that they're regulating it. I would much rather have seen, let's try to get it out of the environment, getting it to stop being entered into the environment, and then take a look at the drinking water treatment process as the kind of the final barrier for the customer.
Yeah, sort of the stopgap instead of the first solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What do you think, Professor Penny?
Yes, I agree 100% with Jeff. Always better to stop the source than treat it to remove it. But, you know, right now it's in landfills, hazardous waste sites, all kinds of things. So even if production and industrial release were halted, we would still have some in our drinking water. And quite frankly, what I'd like to see is the state provide free testing for people who have wells, like they do for lead.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in the program, we'll talk about how to make festive holiday drinks without alcohol. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about forever chemicals and what stricter EPA reporting limits mean for local water districts. My guests are Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Dan Horn, University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Department of Environmental Health professor and associate director of the University of Cincinnati's Cancer Center, Susan Pinney, and Greater Cincinnati Waterworks Superintendent of Water Quality, Jeff Swertfeger. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.com. Chemicals.org. Professor Penny, before we went to break, you were talking about how these chemicals aren't only found in drinking water, they're found in all kinds of places. Even if we could remove them all from drinking water, what would that mean for people's overall exposure?
Well, it would reduce it somewhat, but as you said, they're found in paper products that are used for serving foods. Those practices have been decreased quite a bit. The PFAS used to be in microwave popcorn bags, but you'll notice the bags are a lot more brittle now because they have removed a lot of the PFAS. So that's just one example. They're found in all kinds of things, but in low levels. But constant exposure at very low levels can cause accumulation in the body.
We did get an email about this from Ruth. Ruth emailed, "Given that there are thousands of different types of PFAS chemicals present in all plastics, shouldn't we be super careful to avoid establishing recycling routes that will permit these chemicals from 1, leaching into the ground and surface water, or from 2, being released into the air while being burned?" She says the hefty Renew Recycling information links state that plastics will be used as underground water drainage blocks and also burned as fuel for cement kilns. We reached out this morning to Rumke and to Hefty. Rumke's response to us, a portion of what they said was, "When considering Rumke's partnership with Hefty Renew, it's crucial to keep in mind that the items that are collected through the program are being recovered for reuse in an environmentally friendly manner. The first and most important thing to keep in mind is that none of the material that is being collected through the Hefty program is being burned. All resulting end products are highly engineered construction materials. These resulting products have been tested by a third party for safety, durability, and reliability. Any resulting drainage materials that are created have been approved as an approved way to drain water in both residential and commercial applications." And I just want to note for our listeners that the Cincinnati Edition team has not had time to fully research this issue or speak in detail with Rumke or Hefty. That's what we heard from Rumke. Professor Penny, what do you think? Do you have concerns about, you know, these programs that are collecting plastics and remaking them into other things?
You know, I have to say we just don't know. There are not enough data available to really assess whether this is a true problem. What we need is some sampling of groundwater and soil around these recycling sites to know what kind of exposure there actually is, and also some atmospheric sampling or air sampling when these items are being burned. You don't know if the levels are really safe until you have some data to show you that.
We have a caller on the line. Hey, Lauren, thanks so much for your call. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for having me. So I'm a medical student at the University of Cincinnati, and I was curious for Dr. Penny, with these studies, how are they measuring like PFAS levels in people's blood? Or is that something that, like, as a future physician, will I have patients coming in asking for me to measure that, like if they're concerned about that?
That's a great question.
That's a very good question. So most of the studies have been conducted measuring PFAS levels in serum. And that's actually costs about $200 per sample. So you can see why they're not very large studies with measurements in many people. Right now, we do not advocate measuring it in people who come to see you unless, for example, they are a worker who worked in the industry and had very high levels of exposure. We actually did a PFAS continuing medical education module that was available until recently, but in that we advocated not measuring in individuals because it's hard to explain what their low levels in serum really mean. There are excellent materials produced by ATSDR and CDC that are patient-friendly at the level of the general public.
Thanks so much for that call, Lauren. That was a terrific question. We also got an email from Margie. Margie emailed, "Water quality in Milford, Ohio, the Old Town area along Mound Avenue. The water has a slick, oily feel and a chemical smell. What is the source of the supply of water? Is the Evans pollution issue involved? Who And when is it tested? Would the pollution be different in hot versus cold water? There's a lot in there. Jeff, do you have any idea where that water comes from?
She would need to contact the Milford Waterworks themselves to figure out exactly where it's coming from. They can help maybe determine if there's a contamination issue happening there and how to solve that.
Okay, great. Well, Margie, Milford Waterworks, that's the place to call. Jeff, if the federal government requires water districts to make these expensive upgrades, you mentioned for Cincinnati, Greater Cincinnati Waterworks, smaller plant, could be $80 million or more. Do you think chemical companies should have to foot the bill or help foot the bill?
I think absolutely. I think this is something that we being both Cincinnati Waterworks and our ratepayers. I mean, we're a public entity. I mean, we in terms of like we're owned by the city of Cincinnati. You know, we don't have a profit margin that we can go in and pay for these types of things. And we didn't cause this pollution, and we're passive receivers of this type of pollution. So absolutely, I think that that should play a part of it, to having the polluters actually pay for part or all of that cleanup.
Yeah. Professor Penny, most or all of us have some amount of these chemicals in our bodies, right? What would it take to get rid of them? I mean, you mentioned they're called these forever chemicals because it takes such a long time for them to leave our bodies. Is it even possible to rid our bodies of these forever chemicals, or is it a question of reducing exposure as much as possible?
The answer is absolutely reducing exposure. There's no way that I know of to hurry up the process currently of getting rid of these chemicals.
Is it helpful when it comes to reducing exposure? You were talking about these microwave popcorn bags that used to have these PFAS and food wrappers and containers. Would it be helpful to limit the foods we consume that are packaged in plastics overall? I mean, what are some tips that you give people for reducing that exposure?
Yeah. To some extent, one piece of advice that I would give people, if they have any old Teflon or nonstick coated pans, I would get rid of them, because at this point they're at least, you know, several years old. And as those Teflon surfaces degrade, the PFAS do get into the food you're cooking in those pans.
Mm. Dan, there are people who want to see PFAS eliminated completely. That would be difficult to do, wouldn't it? What would it take to stop these at the source of where they're being created?
Well, part of the reason this is a problem is these chemicals were very good at doing what the chemical companies wanted them to do. They created quality nonstick surfaces. They created fire-resistant material. They created, Gore-Tex and other water-resistant material. And so they were used extensively because they worked. Now we understand how dangerous some of these chemicals are. Getting them out of these products and finding alternatives is the trick. And one thing that's happening is that in the last decade or so, you're seeing more lawsuits, which gets companies' attention. You see more legal settlements, which also gets their attention. Jeff mentioned the cost of overhauling some of these facilities. DuPont recently participated in a $13.7 billion settlement with water districts. I believe Greater Cincinnati is a part of that suit. And presumably that money would go toward trying to upgrade some of these facilities to deal with, the consequences of years of just dumping the stuff into the environment. So there's no easy answer to any of that. I think some of these companies are trying to find alternatives now because, frankly, it's bad financially to continue doing this, and it's bad PR. You know, you see movies like Dark Waters, all these lawsuits. I think there's a recognition now that these chemicals are a problem, and they're not just a way to produce products that people want. There's consequences to doing that.
Jeff, what's the next step with these new EPA limits? What are you watching for from Greater Cincinnati Waterworks when it comes to what the US EPA is doing?
Yeah, so the US EPA just proposed some limits. They proposed a regulation for six of these compounds. So they proposed these regulations, they took public comment, and now they're considering the public comment. So we expect sometime maybe in January or so, they'll come out with a final regulation saying this is what the limits are on drinking water. Now, I would like to underscore something Dr. Penny said just a minute ago, that, you know, the source, there's lots of sources of these compounds besides just the drinking water. The EPA tells us that about 20% is from drinking water. So really, if you're interested in avoiding these compounds, there's a lot of work that you need to do, a lot of things like besides just throwing out your Teflon pants, but looking at your clothing, look at your carpeting, and look at all those types of sources of exposure in your environment, and need to take a look there as well.
Yeah. Great point. I've been talking with Cincinnati Inquirer reporter Dan Horn, University of Cincinnati College of Medicine Department of Environmental Health professor and associate director of the University of Cincinnati Cancer Center, Susan Penny, and Greater Cincinnati Waterworks Superintendent of Water Quality, Jeff Swartfeger. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Up next, holiday celebrations don't have to include alcohol. We're going to get some tips for making tasty mocktails. This is Cincinnati Edition.